Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. Today is Friday at long last. It is the 27th of August, 2021. I am your host, Kelly Gamont. As always, with me on Secure Your Stuff Friday, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Kelly. Are you ready to give people reasons to drink this weekend?
Well, if you need more reasons than you have already, because it is August 27th, 2021, by all means, we're here for you. This is just one of the many services we offer. In fact, I'm going to have you talk about this first story, and I'm just going to go get a drink now because I know it's coming. So the first thing we have to talk about is we've had another a new chapter in Mr. Cook Goes to Washington.
Yes, but this is a good reason, I think. So in the past couple weeks, a couple episodes ago, we talked about how the Department of Defense, Homeland Security, they're trying to work with private companies to, you know, let's all work together in cybersecurity with, you know, those ransomware attacks, for example.
Yeah.
So that's what this meeting was about. A bunch of tech CEOs, as well as non-tech companies, met with the White House, President Biden. Some of these people were Tim Cook from Apple, Satya Nadella from Microsoft, someone from Google, and I think this MarketWatch.com article doesn't mention who it was. But these are, you know, CEOs. I don't know who the I forget his name. Oh, Sundar Pichai.
Yeah, Sundar Pichai. We've heard about him before. These were all people that testified in front of Congress for different things. So
right.
Yeah.
So yeah, the meeting was on Wednesday. Biden was urging these CEOs to improve their cybersecurity. And in response, these companies are pledging various billions of dollars to improve. So, for example, Microsoft on Wednesday said it will invest $20 billion over 5 years to speed up its cybersecurity work. And it will also make available $150 million in technical services to help various levels of local governments to keep their security systems up to date.
All right. Interesting. One of the other people they mentioned is a phrase we're going to have to get used to because it's new and it's kind of weird because it's literally the first time it hasn't been this. And that is Amazon CEO Andy Jassy.
Yes.
Because Andy that's Jassy. Not a thing. Because that literally this is only the second time it's been different. So this is the first time it's actually changed. Amazon CEO Andy Jassy, just go write that down, you know, practice a few times in the mirror so it doesn't sound so weird, was also at the meeting. That was the one that I was looking for, because I saw earlier I saw a list of the names of the people who were attending, and I'm like, who's that guy? Because they didn't say Amazon's Andy Jassy or anything like that. So I'm like, who's that? So
because I think Jeff Bezos might be the chairman now.
Yeah, he's Amazon. Yeah, he doesn't run anything anymore. He's just the chairman so that he's got time to go to space.
Exactly.
You know, he's a busy dude. Part of why that was interesting to me is because they made sure Amazon was invited, because Amazon runs something called AWS, which is Amazon Web Services, that lots of people use for a bunch of different things, because AWS is a pretty big category of stuff. So there's a lot that goes into that. So I think I'm glad to see that there was sort of advancement on this front. It was a thing that was announced, and we haven't really heard anything about it. So there was at least a meeting, and now maybe getting everybody in the same room will help spur some progress on some of those fronts. So I think that's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
So go ahead and take us, since we both talked about that one, I didn't get a chance to go get that beverage. So I'm going to let you talk about social engineering.
Yes.
As we keep talking about.
Yeah, because I think we talked about it last week. This article is from Atlas VPN. Their security team found that social engineering attacks were responsible for the majority of business breaches in 2020. They talk about other threats too. These are like advanced persistent threats. I think those are like government sponsored hacking groups. They also mentioned ransomware, denial of service attacks, security misconfigurations. And they also say incidents attributed to the third party, which is the lowest. So yeah, okay. Social engineering is still a thing. And we talked about one of the, one form of it can happen with phishing emails. And we will talk about something like that later. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you get an email from someone, like it looks like your bank. They ask you to log in. Maybe they said, you know, the message could be, there was an unsecured transaction on your account, log in. Mm. And if you click that email, it will bring you to a website that also still looks like it comes from your bank. But in reality, it's a fake website. And if you log in, your account username and password will then be stolen.
Yeah. A lot of times those messages can be even less specific. There was an issue with your account. Please click here to resolve. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Or you will get one that I've gotten recently that looked really good, by the way, was it looked like an App Store receipt for something that I didn't buy. I got it for... and this is the thing, this is why it was sort of alarming to me, is because I looked at it and it was like a year of Spotify, it said. And $99 for a year of Spotify or something. And I went, I didn't pay for Spotify. What the? Wait a minute. And then what saved me was muscle memory. Because what I always do is if I'm reading my mail on my computer, I put my cursor over the link and then I wait before I click.
Yep.
And I put my cursor over the link and I waited and it showed me that the domain was .com. I'm like, yeah, that's not a link I'm going to click on. But continuing to look, like the Apple logo was a little bit different and like the font wasn't quite right, you know, but like at first glance, like I was ready to be like, wait a minute. Of course I have to report a problem. I didn't buy a year of Spotify. And the thing is, like, you know, I don't know how many people do like, you know, a year at a time or whatever. So, you know, it may not have caught a lot of people. So I think that was part of why it was notable to me, because I'm probably one of the few people that's not paying for Spotify a year at a time. So, So the social engineering is anything where it doesn't take access to your computer to do the thing that somebody wants to do. It takes access to a person to do the thing that you want to do. So like, you know, if you get on the phone with tech support and you go, you know, gee willikers, it's a real bummer. This is what happened. And I just can't get into my account anymore. And can you help me and whatever, you know, and then the person on the phone has pity on you and does the thing that they're not supposed to do. That's social engineering, because what you hacked was the person, not the account or the server or the computer or whatever. So...
And that's one of the things they say in security is the human is the weakest link.
100% of the time. Yes. Yeah. As soon as you introduce people into the equation, you have a problem, because there are people as part of the equation. And that's just the way of things. That's always going to be the way of things. That's just how it works. So, yeah. And speaking of people being involved, causing things to be difficult, we have news of a scammer.
Yes. So
now the good news is he got caught. Like, let me underscore all of this with, dude got caught.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's a good way to start. He's behind the bars now. So this is an example of social engineering. I've seen some other headlines from websites that say, you know, this person hacked into iCloud accounts, but that's not the case. It's social engineering. So this guy, I'm going to pronounce his name as Hao Kouqi. He is from La Puente, Los Angeles. He has agreed to plead guilty to 4 felonies, which includes conspiracy to gain unauthorized access to a computer. So here's what happened. He impersonated Apple customer support. It sounds like this was through email, to trick people into giving him their account login information. In this way, he was able to gain access to thousands of iCloud accounts, and he collected over 620,000 photos to collect and share images of, quote, nude young women. So looking for the nudes.
Fabulous.
Yeah. So what's interesting, I mentioned email. The FBI revealed in some court documents that they found 2 Gmail addresses he was using. One was called Apple Backup iCloud. The other one was Backup Agent iCloud, in order to target these victims. They found over 500,000 emails in the 2 accounts, including about 4,700 with iCloud user IDs and passwords. It sounds like there were multiple other people involved with this guy, because I think he's, you know, he's probably selling or trading these images. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so he has been caught. On August 5th, he pled guilty to one count of conspiracy, 3 counts of gaining unauthorized access to a protected computer, and he faces up to 5 years in prison for each of these 4 crimes. Now, I ended my article with a quote from him that I thought was kind of eye-rolling. It says, Mr. Chi expressed fear that public exposure of his crimes would ruin my whole life. I'm remorseful for what I did, but I have a family. And, you know, as they say, if you can't do the, don't do the crime if you can't do the time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that you have a family should have kept you from doing it in the first place if what you were worried about was them finding out, because they're always going to find out.
Yeah.
So interesting. But again, upside, he got caught. Like, let's make sure that's the part that we talk about. Yes, he got caught. He was doing something crappy and got busted for it. And that's good news. So I'm glad to talk about that.
He got caught, and also, like I said, there wasn't any security bug or vulnerability in iCloud photos.
That's the piece.
He's just tricking people into giving him their information.
Yeah. Half a million emails. So this goes back to, again, more muscle memory on my part. Be 10% skeptical of everything in your inbox, even if it looks like it's from your mom or from your best friend or from somebody that emails you all the time. Be 10% skeptical and, like, kind of give it a little side eye before you actually do whatever it is that's in the message. It's always a good idea.
Yeah. And, like, one more thing, just, you know, even if you do think it's legit, don't click on the links in the email itself. Like, if it's an email from your bank, go to your bank's website and log in there.
Yep, exactly. Anything that's like, click here, you don't have to do that. If it's legit, you can log into the thing, and the thing will say, "You have it. Here's the deal. Go fix it." You know, whatever. So, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the good news is this week we have no This Week in Data Breaches. The bad news is we have a This Week in Data Leaks.
Yes. So this is a. It has to do with Microsoft Power Apps. Mm-hmm. It's not really something I'm familiar with. Wired wrote this up. They say there was some misconfiguration with the system, and it leaked 38 million database records. Some of this data included COVID-19 contact tracing, as well as a lot of other sensitive information, from phone numbers and home addresses to social security numbers. And not only is it your contact tracing, it's also your vaccination status.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, as far as I understand it, Power Apps, they can be used by a bunch of different businesses for a variety of things. Mm-hmm. They mentioned some of the companies that were affected included American Airlines, Ford, a transportation and logistics company, J.B. Hunt, the Maryland Department of Health, New York City Municipal Transportation Authority, as well as New York City Public Schools.
Yay. Now, so, okay, so Power Apps, the little bit I do know about it is that it's sort of like Automator and Shortcuts on the Mac side, which is an easy way for people to build like an automation tool that does a particular thing without having to know a coding language in order to do that. That's the long and the short of it for the most part. So so they turn into these little apps that you can use, sort of like if you build something in Automator and say, you know, make it make it into an app. It's the same sort of thing, sort of like Shortcuts are going to end up being on Monterey, because when we bring Shortcuts to the Mac, we're going to have a lot of options like this. So I think they call it like low code or no code options. So you don't have to know a bunch of code in order to like make a thing that goes and gets a data set and slices and dices it in a particular fashion and then presents it to you nicely. That's kind of the thing that we're looking at here. Now, a thing I want to ask about is we talked about it being a data leak. What is the difference between a data leak and a data breach?
So I don't know if this is the official difference. This is just my own thoughts on this. So the way I see it is that there is more proactive things going on with the data breach. I see that as a hacker has actually broken into your system and stolen information. A data leak is more passive, I think. That is when you have those AWS servers or other servers that they are not password protected, and or the information within is not encrypted. Mm-hmm. And it's there are ways to find these open servers even through a search engine. So, you know, anyone can just click on the link to them in Google search, and now you have access to that server.
Yeah. And that's like basically that's the difference. Like a leak is sort of a passive thing. Like nobody bothered to change the admin password on the thing, or there is no password or whatever it is. And then due to that lack of action, like that data was available for someone else to go and get, not like I'm setting out to go get all of the information out of all these power apps from Microsoft. And so I'm going to go find the way that there's a gap in that security so that I can exploit it. If I do exploit it, that's a data breach because I went and got it, which is not the same thing. So, yeah, I think your definition is pretty right on.
Okay, good. And so speaking of that passive kind of nature, Wired does say Microsoft did not respond to a request for comment, but they say at the beginning of August, Microsoft announced that Power App portals will now default to storing API data and other information privately, which implies the default was not private at all, I guess.
Yeah. Yay. That's good to know. And while we're talking about things being private or not, there is a story that is out now that is mildly alarming. If you just sort of cruise by the headline, it's going to really freak you out. But we're here to dispel a little bit of that. And that has to do with using a VPN.
Yeah, and that includes my headline. I did purposely make that kind of clickbaity, so shame on me.
Okay, Andrew.
So this story is from Motherboard. Their headline is, "Here is how data brokers sell access to the backbone of the internet." And they also mentioned this is kind of an open secret in the cybersecurity world. So ISPs, they're giving away detailed information about network activity to private businesses. And then these businesses sell access to that data to other third parties. They also mention including the threat intelligence industry. Now, this is called NetFlow data, and it's the definition I saw, it refers to IP network traffic that can be collected as it enters or exits a network interface. And using this data in aggregate, it is possible for them to learn things about network traffic, even if a person is using a VPN. But the thing that we really want to stress is that you're still safe using a VPN. They still don't know what websites you're visiting, but this data is more like metadata. So it's collecting information about what time this person accessed a VPN, or maybe trying to get their location, for example. So it's things like that.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that needs to be noted on this, is because this feels like a story that's going to turn into a much bigger deal over time, that your VPN can be snooped on, and that's not what's actually happening. So yeah. It's metadata, which is data about data. Now, that's not to say that it's good that that's happening, to be sure. Right. But if you're using a reasonable VPN, the VPN is... the VPN is still secure, like, for the most part. You know, if you're using one that we've recommended, like, the reason we recommend them is because they don't keep any of the browsing data and all that kind of stuff. So you don't have to worry about that part of it. What it can be used for is the same sort of thing as, like, cell phone metadata, where we can use it to draw a picture of where your cell phone was at these times on these days based on, like, the tower it was pinging. It's more that kind of data. So it's going to be really hard for somebody to go, hey, Kelly, your phone was in all these places at the same time as all these bank robberies. And for me to go, yeah, but I was home the whole time, and have somebody believe that. Uh-huh. That's what we're talking about. So it's not, you know, you were live streaming on Twitch when you robbed that bank that time, you know, like, it's slightly more subtle. So it's just data about the data that you have. So they can't show, like, I made a bunch of phone calls to the bank right before I robbed it or anything like that. But they can see, like, my phone was attached to that tower, you know, at the time the bank got knocked over or whatever. So apparently I've turned myself into a bank robber in this scenario. So there you go. The thing about it is to make sure that, like, it's metadata about the VPN traffic. It's not the VPN traffic itself. And that's a very, very, very important distinction. That's why we're making it. So,
Motherboard had mentioned this company that was using this sort of thing to, like, find hackers and, like, trace their path through the internet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I'm sure we will find out more about this as this evolves, if it turns out to be something that's a little bit more interesting. And it sounds like the seeds are there for it to possibly turn into something bigger. And if it does, we will talk about it here. So
we will.
Thank you, Andrew, for joining me today. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. Everybody have a great weekend. I will talk to you Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other, and let's be careful out there.